I'm Rose Scott alongside Dennis O'Hare. During this legislative session, there was a push for cityhood. It was the focus for unincorporated South Fulton County. Now, Dennis, as you know, that bill, well, it failed shortly. It failed again for the second year in a row. Now, that's just one of many issues regarding the current state of Fulton County. And joining a closer look to discuss that and more, well, County Commission Chair John Eaves. Commissioner Eaves, thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the dialogue and conversation.
Okay, well, let's get into it. Let's begin with House Bill 514. It would have authorized a referendum regarding unincorporated South Fulton County. It passed in the House, stalled in the Georgia Senate. But from your viewpoint, why did it fail again?
Well, it was disappointing. First of all, the Board of Commissioners, we took a position back in December that the citizens of South Fulton who live in the unincorporated area should have a right to vote and decide their destiny. So as you stated correctly, it went from the House to the Senate and then it stalled. I don't know the final details of why it happened, but the fact is it did not happen. And it was disappointing because I think that this is a rather, I won't say contentious issue, but it's an issue that citizens in South Fulton, about 90,000 people plus, are concerned about. And I wanted to provide them with an opportunity to have a choice by way of a referendum later this year. It didn't happen. So hopefully the legislation will come back in 2016 session and will go through fluidly and signed by the governor.
You talked about that the commission took a stand on this. Did you all do it? Well, do you think you could have done more in terms of, without being too meddlesome, but maybe talking to your delegation down at the Capitol, trying to really push for the importance of having cityhood in South Fulton?
Well, what happened was you had actually some senators from outside of the Fulton County area who sort of sabotage, for lack of a better description, the process. And so it just didn't happen. We as a county government, we did what I think was very, very appropriate. We took a public vote and we reaffirmed our vote just last week, 7-0 vote. But still, it didn't happen. And so
you say sabotage, and that's a very strong charge, Chairman Eaves. And there was some division. I remember reading about between Senator Vincent Fort. And I think Donzella James.
Senator Donzella James, yeah.
So when you say sabotage, I think, to be fair, you need to probably go in depth a little bit more and explain that.
Well, perhaps that was a little bit of an over-exaggeration to describe, but it's disappointing, I'll say. And I go back to what I said earlier. It didn't happen. It should have happened. I believe that citizens should have the right to vote. And even if you disagree on whether the merits of the bill in terms of whether it's a good thing or not, the fact is people should have a right to choose.
Rose mentioned Senator Vincent Fort and Senator Donzella James, both Democrats, both from Fulton County. Senator Fort was arguing, look, there's no evidence that the people in the unincorporated area want the city of South Fulton. He said it was bad legislation. Senator James was strongly defending the idea. But if you're the rest of the Senate and you see the Fulton delegation can't even agree on this, what are the odds that you're going to vote to set this before the voters? I mean, isn't that a major problem here?
Well, the Democratic process always has opposing views. And just because they're opposing views doesn't mean that something can't go through. The fact is, the Board of Commissioners, the individuals who are duly elected locally, we took a stance. We hear directly from the constituents. We're closest to the constituents.
But doesn't that go to Senator Fort's point, which is that he's not sure that the residents themselves even want this? Do you have evidence to indicate otherwise?
I heard both sides, Dennis. So I've been out there quite a bit hosting town hall meetings, going to homeowners association meetings. I heard both sides. And so I think the fair thing was to have given people the opportunity to decide, to choose, to vote. And if it were a 50 plus one vote percentage, one way or the other, that's the way that that will be the result.
Will it be harder now, even though the bill is not dead? It can come back next year.
Right.
It's a two-year session. Will it be harder now, though, because of annexation efforts for places like Atlanta that might be more attractive to some of the people in those unincorporated areas?
I don't think it's going to be any harder. I think it is potentially a little bit more complicated in terms of sorting the options out before the constituents. But I envision the board taking a similar stance later this year for the 2016 session.
And so would you fight the annexation efforts from Atlanta?
Well, again, citizens have a right to decide. There was legislation in the legislature in which a referendum was being proposed to decide on annexation. I felt that that was contradictory and that was very, very confusing. There's a natural process of an annexation where a certain percentage of homeowners, commercial business entities, could, by way of approving on a writing on a list, a petition, if 60% or so say yes, then they can be annexed. That's the process that's typically used. And so I think that that's fine. But the legislative process that was proposed, I believe that that was confusing and counterproductive.
When you hear the word annexation and then you throw in the other word, City of Atlanta, and how much sleep are you losing at night over that? And let's just be really clear, Chairman Eaves, you and City of Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed obviously have some difference of opinions on all this. What do you say to people who say this is just an attempt to, for lack of better words, keep Atlanta out of your business in a sense? And that would make sense. Some would say, okay, you don't want City of Atlanta in your business. But you mentioned that people have a right to make this decision. So let's just say you started hearing, well, you know what, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. Now, I'm looking at a whole list of facts here about why annexation into the City of Atlanta is bad, from taxes to the schools to everything. What would you say to people who, on the other side, to say, well, maybe it's not such a bad deal after all?
Well, first of all, I want to say that the City of Atlanta is within Fulton County, and
sure,
we are proud and happy, and we benefit as a result of the city being—
There's a little piece in DeKalb. Let's not forget
okay,
that.
Okay, small piece. But it's a significant piece in Fulton County, along with 13 other cities. And so city residents are also county residents. But the fact is, what we're talking about is a 10% of the Fulton County population that's in what's called an unincorporated area. They are technically not a city. The county provides city-like services. And so the issue is, should the county continue to provide that, or should the City of Atlanta provide that to the citizens? And again, they have a right to decide on that.
Well, have you heard from citizens that said, well, can you give me some reasons why this is really a bad thing then?
I've heard all the above. I've heard it's a good thing. I've heard it's a bad thing. I've heard it's a terrible thing. I've heard that they're indifferent about it.
We're talking with Fulton County Commission Chair John Eaves. This is A Closer Look on 90.1 WABE. We'll pick up some of the other issues facing the county when we come back. As A Closer Look continues with Rose Scott, I'm Dennis O'Hare. Our guest, Fulton County Commission Chair John Eaves. Mr. Chairman, since 2006, the county's been under a consent decree supervised by a federal judge for its county jail. Now, back in October of 2013, about a year and a half ago, you told me the county was, and these were your words, 99% there in terms of completing all of the punch list, if you will, that you had to meet for improving conditions at the county jail. A year and a half later, if you were 99% there, then are you there now?
I'm 99.9% there. We've done all that we can. The good news is we have a new federal judge who's overseeing the case, and there was a conference hearing heard earlier this year in which we were asked by the judge to submit a request to get from underneath the consent decree. We submitted the request in March, and I'm very, very optimistic. There really is a good story in terms of what the county has been doing in terms of addressing some of the challenges with the jails. Number one, the numbers have gone down. Last year, we had about 28,000 mm-hmm. folks who were booked in the jail. That compares to about 46,000 that were booked about 4 years ago.
Part of that was, though, because you moved the female inmates out, right?
Well, the female population is relatively smaller compared to the male population. But that number that I just quoted really is the overall number of people booked into the jail system. So the numbers have gone down because of the county's emphasis on diversion, accountability, minimizing recidivism, and so there really is a good story in what's happening.
But you still have issues with staffing. I believe that's what the plaintiffs in the lawsuit that was brought against the county are still saying, that the staffing is not what it should be. I just wanted to get your response to that.
So to that concern, we actually have authorized a staffing analysis to be done by a neutral party who will go in and look at the number of folks who are currently employed as detention officers and deputies. And based on the number of people who are in the jail and the space, there is an objective formula that could be utilized in terms of determining how many people should be in the jail. And so we're waiting on that analysis, and whatever the analysis comes out to say, we will actually abide by it from a budgetary standpoint. So it may be up or down.
Chairman Eaves, the Southern Center for Human Rights said that just even last month, there were just 16 days when shifts were full. So that still indicates that there's a problem there in staffing. Do you know why that's happening? And is someone reporting back to you? Do you think you're getting enough information then if we're still hearing these reports from another entity?
So in defense of the county side of government,
sure,
we have funded the requests through the budgetary process for the number of people to be hired. We funded that. Whether those positions are filled or not, that's another matter. The sheriff does have a challenge in terms of attrition. It's a very stressful job, and the turnover rate is very, very high, about 33% to 40% attrition rate. And so when there's a number that's down according to whatever the current staffing levels are, is not because of funding, it's because of the hiring process and the retention process of employees. So it may be correct, but that's not really our issue in terms of the lack of funding.
Well, would this be your issue then? Because that leads me to probably maybe their concerns about medical attention for the inmates. If you have a lack of staffing, are you just referring to officers, or are we talking about just lack of staffing across the board? There have been some concerns about, you know, medical attention, medical resources being available for the inmates.
Well, that's not true, because we actually fund a separate health contract that's about $15 million that hires trained medical professionals in both the physical health and the behavioral health area. So this is basically an outsource effort where you have staff in the jail who provide the services in the jail for the inmates.
How often are you or the commission getting updates then?
Oh, we get updates on the number of people served, the type of general conditions that are being dealt with, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a separate entity that of trained professionals who are brought in that are funded by about a $15 million contract.
I want to come back to something you just mentioned when you were answering Rose's question, which is the hiring process. Some of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit feel, okay, yes, it is tough to hire people. There is attrition, but they're saying that there are delays in the hiring process that don't need to be there. And that might be one reason why it's hard to fill the positions, not just because people leave, but because there are unnecessary delays in hiring them. I want to get your response to that.
I don't agree with that. We've actually streamlined the process, Dennis. I think that the issue is the whole process, external of whatever controls we have at the county. The fact of the matter is, when people work in a law enforcement situation, there is drug screening, there is background check. And believe it or not, you have people who apply for law enforcement, including jail work, who have a background, criminal background or substance abuse problem or challenge. That has to be vetted, and that also sort of prolongs the process.
Does the staffing shortage, though, lead to more violent incidents in the jail? Because one of the concerns has been that if you had a full staff, that officers would be able to see incidents as they're developing and prevent them. And now, at least one of the allegations is they're coming upon people after they're injured, and they're sort of tending to them after the fact. Is that a problem, and are we still seeing a higher than what one might expect in a rate of violent incidents in the jail?
Well, that's a fair question, Dennis. I mean, the data that I've seen doesn't necessarily support that conclusion. Now I'm going to go back to the staffing analysis. We feel that in 2015 there needs to be an updated, refreshing review of the staffing needs of the jail. That includes, but is not limited to, is there technology out there now that could be utilized instead of a body visually looking down the wing of a pod? Can cameras play a certain way places eliminate the need of a physical body. And so part of the analysis is also how can technology be used to maintain and enhance security at a much cheaper cost than actually a body being present.
So then what would you say to somebody who says, look, what the analysis might do is give the county an out from having to have the kinds of staffing levels that at least some of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit would think is appropriate?
I see this as an objective recommendation, a bar that we will work towards. Believe me, the overall goal is for public safety for our community, but also for the offenders who are in the jail. And so that's our goal.
Chairman Eaves, you are coming up. You're going to give the State of the County address. You can have this opportunity now to give us a little preview. What's on that bullet list? What will you talk about?
Well, we are the leading county in the state of Georgia. We're the capital county of the state of Georgia. We have a great story to tell, and we want to use the State of the County address to really articulate and explain and champion the great things that we're doing.
Like what?
We are a strong, economic, viable entity. We hold the fifth highest number of corporations than any other place in the country. We have the ninth highest number of college-educated folks than any other place in the country. The county plays a role in that, whether they're providing financial incentives to businesses who want to come here or businesses that need to be retained here. We have a strong healthcare delivery system that we support. We support Grady Hospital in the amount of $62 million a year. We provide services for youth and as well as seniors. We also have a robust library system. We have a new county manager, and we have a very collegial board.
Well, and to be fair, because you're touting this new county manager, you all have had some issues with personnel, with your county manager, the county attorney, and there are allegations with your former county. David Ware, he's going to be leaving, correct?
Well, he submitted his resignation.
So, you know, you have to address that. There have been some issues with allegations of sexual harassment. So what do you want to, you're touting that, and that's great. So what do you want people to know about, I guess, the ethics involved here with county personnel, and are you going to make sure these folks are going to be around? Because your county managers, you had one, then you had an interim, then you fired that guy, and...
Rose, you're kind of mixing the comments, the question
you've
a
had,
little bit.
Okay, here's the thing. Let me back. You've had some key personnel, some turnovers, and in one of those positions, there was allegations of sexual harassment, not just once, not just twice, but three times. So there is some issues there. So what can you tell?
Well, first of all, that was an out-of-court settlement, and there was no admission of guilt nor statement of innocence, so it was out-of-court settlement that was done. That's different from the fact is we now have an exemplary county manager. We now have a strong commission. We have a chairman who won with 63% of the vote. Did you see how
who might that be?
Did you see how I perched up when you asked me at the State of the County address? Because we got a good story to tell, and the future
that's
the future of Fulton County is exceedingly bright, as well as the present.
But in telling a story, you want to be fair to people about turnover in key positions, correct?
But I think that, you know, on the one hand, county government, because we're so big and we're the capital, we're always under the microscope. So there's never any sort of comparison of other county governments. The fact is, in government, there's always attrition.
In order to do the services that we've been talking about, you need money. And there was a big face-off with the legislature, which passed a bill saying the county could not raise its property tax rate. You managed to work that out this time, but are we still facing that? Or I think that bill expired this year, if I recall correctly. So are you looking at having to go to county taxpayers and say, if we're going to finish the job at the jail, if we're going to do everything that we want to do, especially with new cities taking some of the revenue for the services that we provided before, are you going to have to go back to county taxpayers and say we're going to have to raise taxes?
The short answer is no. We have $120 million in reserve. We're strong fiscally. We had a shortfall last year that led to us doing a modest millage rate increase the first time in 23 years. We actually repealed the law from two years ago and the judge has rendered a favorable decision in our favor. And so it has been quiet, but the fact is we actually had the ability to do the increased millage rate.
If, though, so many places are incorporating, you've heard the argument, does Fulton County need to be Fulton County as we know it?
Absolutely. We still provide $630 million worth of general fund services to citizens of our 1 million strong county. We also still provide water and reclamation water use. We do a lot of wonderful things throughout the county, north, south, and all parts in between. The issue with the cityhood is the municipal services that we provide for 10% of our population. The general fund supports everybody in Fulton County.
Fulton County Commission Chair John Eaves, we got a lot more to talk about, but we don't have much more time to talk about it. Mr. Chairman, thanks so much for being with us and taking on the questions. We appreciate it.
Dennis and Rose, thank you as well. This is great.
Come back.
Okay.